Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, yes. This is another episode of Wake Up African People, and we have Brother Ashra Kwesi with us and Brother Mustafa Hefni, the brother from Egypt, that they tried to convince that he was white, but when he looks in the mirror, he's clearly a black man. And they're going to be talking about the event we got coming up in Detroit, Ashra Kwesi and Meriwa Kwesi, and Brother Hefni is going to speak there too. And it's on Saturday, May the 21st, 2016 at 1:30 to 5:30 at the Royal Oak Township Rec Center. And that's 21272 Mendota Avenue, Ferndale, Michigan, right outside of Detroit, right across the street from Detroit. So today, they're going to give you a little about what they're going to be talking about, and we're going to let Brother Mustafa Hefni tell his part of his story to you now. Brother Hefni, the mic is yours.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dr. Mustafa Hefni. I'm an Egyptian Nubian, a black man, but I'm classified as white by the U.S. government. And for the past 28 years, I have been fighting to get my classification changed and the classification of other Egyptian Nubians changed back to black, and to restore the Nubian civilization to the black race. I was a bilingual resource teacher with Wayne County Regional Education Service Agency in Wayne, Michigan for 13 years. The short name of this agency is Wayne County RETA. And I have a PhD from Wayne State University, PhD in education from Wayne State University. This is how things started. I'm a black man first. Let me tell you this. I'm a black man. My hair is kinky. I have brown skin. My features are African. And I am proud to be a black man. At work, Wayne County RETA sent all employees a form called Race Ethnic Identification Card. We were requested to indicate our race on this form. I indicate that I am black. The Director of Human Resources sent me a letter a few days later telling me that I am white, not black, according to Directive Number 15 of the Office of Management and Budget, and threatening me that if I did not change it back to white, my education career will be ruined. A few days later, one of the top administrators and one of the most powerful men in Michigan called me to his office and told me, if you ever say you're black again, no one will hire you. And if hired, you'll be running from one job to the other for the rest of your life. I reported this threat to the U.S. Attorney General at the time, Mr. Richard Thornburg, in one of my five letters of complaint to him, complaints against Wayne County RETA. No investigation was ever conducted and no reply was received. Five letters of complaint about discrimination, harassment, and threats and intimidation, racial intimidation. He did not respond, and no investigation was ever conducted. Thank you. I'm trying to speak without looking at my notes. But anyway. I filed two Equal Employment Opportunity Commission complaints against Wayne County RETA, and both of them were dismissed without prejudice. Both of them were dismissed without investigating my evidence through ingenious manipulation. As a result of the high-level connections of Wayne County RETA. You have to know that Wayne County RETA is the largest intermediate school district in Michigan and the fifth largest in the country. It's the link between the state of Michigan Board of Education and the local school district. All the superintendents in Wayne County meet at Wayne County RETA once a month to report to our superintendent and to get directions from the state. But anyway, Wayne County RETA did not fire me when I kept saying that I am black. But they harassed me, they ridiculed me, they called me a nigger, and they persecuted me and they psychologically tortured me to the point that I left on Social Security psychiatric disability, which lasted 10 years, from 1989 to 1998. 10 years. But anyway, and 10 years. And I was hospitalized in psychiatric hospitals twice, by the way, in 1992 and in 2000. Wayne County Teresa has a lot of connections at the high and the low, at the state and the federal levels. I'll tell you what they did. What, some of the things that they did to intimidate me racially. When I went to file my second Equal Employment Opportunity Commission charge against them, this commission charge against them, I spoke to the receptionist. He recognized my name right away, and he got nervous, and he put me on hold for 1 hour. I knew right away that he knew who I am, and he was expecting me to come and file a report because I was denied promotions for the second time, okay? And he put me on hold for 1 hour, and then he came back and said, an investigation will take your statement right now. And I went in. I had a small pocket-sized tape recorder in my jacket pocket because I knew that something's going to happen. This white investigator took my statement, and in the middle of the statement, I was recording everything. In the middle of the statement, she said, "Touch your private parts. I'm going to file charges." I said, "I did not touch anything. I'm giving you my statement, and I'm recording the whole thing, and I'm going to call my attorney right now." I went outside. I left the room. I went outside. I called my attorney. My attorney called the supervisor. The supervisor said, "It's a mistake. We're going to appoint a male investigator to him." Just to let you know what's going on with Wayne County Teresa, okay? And that's another thing. In 1990, I received a letter from Wayne County Teresa. I opened it, a package. I opened it, and I found my Social Security psychiatric disability report from the psychiatrist who examined me. They accessed it. I don't know how they got it, but they have high-level connections. Many people told me that the government released it to them so they can follow up on the threats to destroy you, to destroy your career. But anyway, I got it in the mail. I opened it. I found out the medical reports from Social Security Administration. Okay? This is another thing. Another thing they did, in 1990, I received two telephone bills from Michigan Bell. Long-distance calls to Washington, D.C. offices. I did not call them. I don't know these people. I called to find out who they were, and they turned out to be U.S. congressmen and government offices. It was obvious that if I had paid these charges, they could have charged me with calling these people to harass them and to intimidate them on the phone and to threaten them on the phone. It's very obvious, okay? But anyway, I filed the lawsuit against Wayne County Teresa, and the lawsuit was dismissed. I filed as a black man under the Civil Rights, the Michigan Civil Rights Act, I think it's called Elliot Larson, I'm not sure now, I forgot. But anyway, it was dismissed, and I filed as a black man while I'm legally white. Wayne County Teresa filed two documents in court, saying that I'm classified as white according to directive number 15. The case was dismissed. But anyway, I filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government. I hired an attorney. I paid him the retainer fee. I gave him all the documents. I gave him all the information. He said he would file the lawsuit right away. He prepared the complaint. I reviewed the complaint. And then all of a sudden, he started to say, "I'm receiving a lot of pressure. I can't file this lawsuit. If I file this, I would be disbarred. I cannot practice law anymore. I would be disbarred." A lot of time he told me this. He would not file it for 6 months. I took the complaint from him. I asked for my retainer fee so I can find another attorney. He refused. I knew that Wayne County or the U.S. government is behind this. I knew that because he would not return my retainer fee so I find another attorney. And I was not working. I was broke. I was not working. Okay? But anyway, He would not give me my money back, and he would not file the charge. I took the complaint from him, and I filed it myself, representing myself. But he prepared the complaint. The case was dismissed without prejudice. The court order stated plaintiff may file a new action one standing established. Anyway, I did not give up. I lost everything, by the way. I have lost my house. I've lost my career. I have filed for bankruptcy. I have lost my car. I lost everything, but I did not give up, and I will not give up because this is a matter of principle to me. I am willing to lay down my life for the cause, for the two causes I've been fighting for, the cause of black racial pride and the cause of restoring the Nubian civilization to the black race. As you know, and Dr. Ashra Kweisi, as you also know, the white man has stolen the ancient Egyptian civilization and the Nubian civilization from the black man. The ancient Egyptian civilization, I'm sorry?
That's it, absolutely.
Yes. He stole the ancient Egyptian civilization from the black man, and he is in the process of stealing the Nubian civilization right now.
Right.
The government's classification of Nubians as white is part of this conspiracy. It's part of it. But anyway, at least four white scholars have claimed that the ancient Egyptians and the Nubians are white. Seligman, Sergi, Elliot Smith, and Kuhn. Okay? If I get reclassified, if the Egyptian Nubians get reclassified as blacks instead of white, these claims would be falling apart completely. And this is what I want to do. There are two black causes involved in my 28-year struggle. Just to be able to say that I'm black, the cause of black racial pride, and the cause of restoring the Nubian civilization to the black race. You guys know about the one-drop rule, right?
Yes.
The one-drop rule.
We know about it here. We live in the system of white supremacy.
Yes. The one-drop rule states that if you have one drop of black blood in your veins, you are black. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This one-drop rule was adopted by the U.S. government in 1860, and it was confirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1986. You saw my picture on Facebook and in the newspapers. I'm a black man, and Egyptian Nubians are black people. It's very obvious that we have more than one drop of black blood in our veins. Very obvious. Very obvious. I am not ashamed of my psychiatric injury. I recovered, completely recovered. But anyway, I'm not ashamed of my psychiatric injury because I consider it a badge of honor because I sustained it in the struggle to help my black people. So I'm not ashamed of it. I'm proud of it.
We're proud of you for being proud, my brother. And we're proud of you for being proud. And we are proud of you for being proud.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I sent Congressman Conyers 5 letters asking him to introduce a bill in Congress to include the Egyptian Nubians in the definition of black person rather than white person, found in Directive number 15, definition of black person. He refused. I called his office to follow up 5 times. He would not talk to me. In 2013 and 2012 and 2013, before that, let me tell you before that, in 2012, I sent President Obama a letter telling him what's going on, discussing the ordeal of Egyptian Nubians and my ordeal with Wayne County Teresa. I asked him for one thing, to help me get reclassified as a black person rather than a white person. And I'm not asking for money, just to get reclassified as a black person. President Obama did not respond to my letter. It was sent by certified mail. I have the return receipt. I sent a letter to Mrs. Michelle Obama, the first lady, telling her what's going on and asking her to hand deliver my letter to President Obama. She did not respond to my letter. It was sent by certified mail. I have the return receipt. I sent Congressman Kennedy 5 letters, like I said. He did not respond. I had over 100 African-American pastors write to him, to Congressman Conyers, asking him to hand deliver my letter to the president. He refused. I had 6 African-American civil rights leaders and pastors write to Congressman Conyers in 2014, write to Congressman Conyers asking him to introduce a bill in Congress to include the Egyptian Nubians in the definition of black person, found in Directive number 15. He refused. So this is what's happening right now. Recently, I filed a complaint. I filed a petition and a complaint with the United Nations High Commissioner on Human Rights, the petition team with the High Commission on Human Rights, asking for four things, asking that all Egyptian Nubians to be reclassified as black people rather than white, and accusing the U.S. government of trying to destroy Nubian identity and Nubian culture and trying to force Egyptian Nubians to assimilate as white. And I asked them to, I asked the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights to help me to have the U.S. government reopen my EEOC charges against Wayne County and my U.S. Attorney General's complaints against the U.S. government to be reopened. I am waiting to hear from the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights. I will not give up. If there is a delay, they told us it will be processed in 4 to 6 weeks, and that I will receive a letter. I did not receive a letter yet. It has been 4 months. I have not received a letter yet, but I'm going public nationwide, worldwide, as a matter of fact. I'm going public. Nothing will stop me except death. Nothing will stop me. I will be reclassified as a black person, and I'm going to take my case to the American people and to the people worldwide. I have written a book about my struggle, and I'm waiting for the results of this struggle to be concluded so I can include it in the book. But I have written a book, an autobiography, okay, with all kinds of documents. By the way, the complaint that went to the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights has 7 pages. It's 7 pages documenting everything and 66 exhibits. Well documented. I want to help.
Okay.
I want the black people to help me go public, radio interviews. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
At the 15-minute mark, and we got to give Aswad Kwesi some time. But I also want to reiterate to the people the diabolical reason they want Brother Mustafa Heffany to be a white man is because of white supremacy and because Egypt is the cradle of civilization. That whole area.
Exactly.
The cradle of civilization and Nubia, all of Northeast Africa, and they want it. And the only way they're going to be able to boast the white supremacy is claiming that they are the builders of that civilization, the greatest civilization on earth. But we have a not-so-secret weapon, and his name is Aswad Kwesi. And he has devoted his life to straighten out this botchery that white people have put in play. Aswad Kwesi, mic is yours.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say how honored I am to be on with Mustafa Heffany. And I'd like to say,
brother,
that I've actually had you in my lecture for many years. In fact, going all the way back to an article I got back in 1997 when I first saw the article with you in it, Egyptian immigrant sues the U.S. government to change his race from white to black.
Correct. This is Detroit Free Press.
Exactly. And I still have that article, and I've exposed it to as many brothers and sisters that I possibly can to see the extent that the extreme that racism and white supremacy will go to deny the Africanness of the Nile Valley. But, of course, we have to go back and understand what we're dealing with here. And we're dealing with the fact that, first of all, Europeans have no ancient history. When you come into Africa, you don't have – when you look at the monuments on the African continent and you look at other places around the world, you don't have monuments older than those on the African continent. And
absolutely,
then you have to look
right
at who built them. They were African men who actually built them. And equally, I wanted to know who we are as an African people, and I met a man named Dr. Yosef Inyakinen that we affectionately know as Dr. Ben, who started taking Africans back to Africa. And I started traveling with him back in 1981, and now 35 years of my life are returning back to Africa to reveal the ancient monuments and temples and seeing the great Africans of the Nile Valley. But we've got to understand that when Europeans, they did everything to deny the African origin, even to the point of taking Egypt itself out of Africa and calling it the Middle East. And this was started by a European named George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, who lived around 1770 to 1881. And Hegel, who was a German philosopher, said that the history of the northern part of Africa belongs to the European world, and Egypt does not belong to Africa. So this is actually what set the pace of robbing African history and literally taking Egypt out of Africa. Now, we know that without, as I refer to, the fallopian tube of the Nile, the longest river in the world, it starts in inner Africa. Okay, there would not have been an Egypt without the Nile. The Nile does not start in Europe. It does not start in Asia. It starts right there in Africa. That civilization that came up out of Africa that our ancestors observed, thousands of years of spiritual ideas that they saw, okay, with nature itself. So, again, when we look at this and see that the viciousness goes even to the extent that even to this very day, that when we see that when you go into the second floor of the Cairo Museum, and the second floor of the Cairo Museum is still there, and there you clearly see the black man right there named Harper of the 18th Dynasty. Now, Maspero, who was the curator of the museum in the late 1800s, and they still have, and I show our group annually every year, and it's talking about Harper, that he's Negroid, but not actually a Negro. Now, here Harper lived 3,000 years ago. Clearly, you can see he's black. Right there in the museum, in the second floor of the Cairo Museum, but Maspero put in there that he's Negroid, but not actually a Negro. So this is the racism, okay, that they started to take away the identity, even to the point where we see that Charles G. Seligman, he is the one that wrote that when we look at the, he said when we look at the Egyptians and the Nubians, that they are referred to as black Caucasians. Now, keep in mind, this is Charles G. Seligman. So this has been going on for a long time to deny the Africanists, and he says the Egyptians, the Nubians, and Ethiopians are black Caucasians called Hamites. So they created this identity where you, it's obvious to see that they're black. It's obvious to see that Mustafa Hefni is black, as he's, you know, as we can see. But here, literally, they're taking away the blackness because Europeans have no ancient history. So even to this day, with Charles G. Seligman saying the Egyptians and Nubians are black Caucasians and making up this thing called black Caucasians, but even if we look at the Webster's Dictionary, okay, and when Europeans first came in, they were plundering everything. Like we know when Napoleon came in 1798, all right, and that's documented by European sources that came down to us, okay, by Baron Vivian Dinan, who was with Napoleon, who witnessed Napoleon blowing off the nose of the greatest and largest colossal and oldest colossal on the planet Earth, and that is Heruam Akhet, that the Greeks referred to as the Sphinx. Here, Napoleon blew off the nose. And so, but at that time, they came in trying to destroy everything, and Webster's Dictionary in the 1890s and 1900, with identification at that time, okay, that they were given to the Egyptians. Now, this is the Webster's New International Dictionary, okay, based on the International Dictionary of 1890 and 1900. And I don't like to use the term because the term was started on the plantation, but just to give you an idea of the racism in the International the Dictionary of 1890 and 1900, it says nigger, a member of any dark-skinned race, as an East Indian is a nigger, and an Egyptian is a nigger. Now, that's according to the Webster's International Dictionary. Then they said, no, let's claim this for ourselves, and let's not destroy it. Let's claim this and make it an Egyptian, make it Egyptian history, a European history, and make it white. So this has been going on all along with Arnold Toynbee, who is one of the European historians, who says when we classify mankind by color to only one of our primary races, which have not made a creative contribution to any one of our 21 civilizations, is the black race. So they knew that they had to create slavery, and to create this inferiority complex through racism and white supremacy was to take away the oldest civilization on the planet Earth, started by black people, started by African people, and by creating the most vicious form of psychopathic racism, literally becoming psychopaths and trying to deny the African history, even to the point where Zadi Hawass, who's also involved in the Egyptian antiquities in Egypt, who when the whole issue came up, when National Geographic came up and made this boy George image of King Tutankhamun. And it was Zadi Hawass who came out and said that the King Tutankhamun was not black. All right? Now, here we can see that identification, when we see that we're stopped by the police and all the various shades of black that we are in the States, that we are black in the States, but all of a sudden when it goes to Egypt, all of a sudden you're not black. So Zadia Wass, who works for the white supremacy Egyptologists, all right, who are maintaining this white supremacy, all right, to make sure that they literally whitewash the African history of the Nile Valley. Now, when African scholars like Dr. Yosef Nyakanin and Dr. Clark and many others who were dealing with this, in fact, it goes all the way back to, you know, the 1817 and 1800s, when David Walker even told us that, when he told us that our liberation starts with identifying with ancient Nubia, the ancient Nubia Egyptian Nile Valley civilization, it was a necessary phase of our identification and a necessary phase of our liberation to study the ancient African Nile Valley civilization that Dr. Ben, when he wrote Black Man of the Nile, bringing us back to the ancient African Nile Valley civilization. And as early as when we look at National Geographic, who came out in, this is in 2008, and they wrote that the Kushites surely belong to the Caucasian race. Now, this is National Geographic in 2008 on page 39 and 40, and they go on to say, speaking of the pyramids in Nubia built by black Nubians, okay, built by Africans there, what do they say in National Geographic? For decades, many historians flip-flop either the Kushite pharaohs were actually white. So we have to understand that the struggle that Mustafa Hefni has gone through, that we are fighting a great white supremacy conspiracy to wipe out African civilization, even though you can see the identity of the people, like even as Mustafa Hefni being a Nubian himself, okay, and seeing the great monuments, you can see that the treasures and the features are clearly African. But this is the psychopathic racism. And even as scholars coming down to our time, my time, when I was back in the 80s lecturing, back in the 90s, and again, when white supremacy got a whiff of us educating students at the university level, Newsweek came out, and then they said, were the ancient Egyptians black Africans? So this is the psychopathic racism, and they put Cleopatra on Newsweek and say, was Cleopatra black? They didn't put Nefertari, okay, the Nubian, 1,500 years before Cleopatra, they put her on the cover because they got something to argue with, because that's during the Greco-Roman period. But the civilization of the Nile Valley is thousands of years old. Why didn't they put Nefertari on the cover, who lived 1,500 years BCE, long before some Cleopatra the Seventh, who lived around 52, okay, BC? So we've got to understand the war that we're dealing with here and how this war has come down, knowing that the foundation of America is built on ancient African knowledge. When we looked and see how the Kushite, the Nubian civilization and architecture, whether we're looking at the George Washington Monument, that is a great tekenu that they call obelisk that came from ancient Nubia and ancient Kemet, or that's referred to as Egypt today. When we look at the laying out of Washington, D.C., is based off of what our ancestors did in ancient Egypt thousands of years ago. When we look at the justice system, okay, and the scales of justice, that's Ma'at. All right, so once this is unlocked, then the maintaining of white supremacy, that there was no civilization on the planet Earth until Europeans come, it can't stand on that square of truth when we can see the truth that African people and how they robbed and incorporated, whether it's in the architectural sciences and everything else, even when the Greeks came in, like Thales and Pythagoras. At that time, the Greeks were saying where they were getting the knowledge from. They didn't say they were getting the knowledge from their own white brothers of Europe. They were saying they were getting the knowledge from Ethiopia. Even in Homer said that we have to return back to Ethiopia to replenish our ideas and our religion, return back to Nubia. This is where the knowledge is coming from, where they gave libation back to Africa on gold vases with black heads on it. This is what maintained the white supremacy by making sure that this knowledge would not be revealed to the world, and that the civilization of the Nile Valley, it either came from somewhere else, it either came from extraterrestrials, all right? No place on the planet Earth do they talk about extraterrestrials, but when it comes to the African continent, then it's referred to as extraterrestrials or somebody else had to build this civilization, as long as you don't say a black man did it. Because what lies in us is an ancient African ancestral genetic memory bank. And once that memory bank is awakened, what African people did yesterday, they can do tomorrow. And this has been the fear. And even as when we look at our brother, Mustafa Hefni, all right, even his knowledge must be squashed. His identity must be squashed. It cannot be awareness be brought to this. And
correct,
this is the
correct.
Fight that has been going on for a long, long time. And I'm most honored that we are coming together to have this presentation right there in Ferndale, Michigan. Is that right, Brother Akbar?
Yes, sir.
Yes,
right,
we're honored to come to reveal this information, to have this awakening of African people that must take place and understand exactly what we're dealing with here, all right, that this is serious business. When I take our groups to the Cairo Museum, and then you see that the African colossals, now even though the features, we got wide nose, thin nose, thick lips and thin lips. We have all the variations of features as well as variations of shades of black, but the ones that are clearly we can see through their nose, like Amenhotep III of the Middle Kingdom over 4,000 years ago, they moved him all the way in the back storage room, and I have to take our groups all the way back there for our people to see him. So what our brother is dealing with, this is where we have got the awakening, the African mind here in America, all right, because we have a voice to the world once we awaken to the awareness. And this is why they did everything to shut down this knowledge. And this knowledge was shut down in the 90s. It was shut down in the 1700s and 1800s when Frederick Douglass was dealing with this knowledge, when Martin Delaney was dealing with this knowledge, and our scholars of today, peace be upon them, Dr. John Henry Clark and Dr. Joseph Inyakinen equally, who was trying to reveal this knowledge. And they got Negroes, okay, in America to make sure that this knowledge would not be exposed to the world. All right, and again, so we have to understand the battle that we're up against, and I'm going to reveal through visual documentation in my presentation to show the images and the representation and all the things that they've done to stop this information, and the secret lies in the fact that America, based its whole foundation and the Western civilization, is based off of ancient African knowledge that came up out of the Nile Valley, and that is the fear.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. By the way, Dr. Ashraf Kwesi, the Luxor, the Temple of Luxor in Luxor, Egypt, has 42 small sphinxes. There is a corridor with 21 statues of sphinxes, smaller sphinxes, on the right hand side and 21 on the second hand side, on the left hand side. I'm sorry. All the noses are broken. All their noses are broken, not just the big sphinx in Giza.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes, even the one that I was talking about a minute ago in the back storage room in the Cairo Museum, his nose has been knocked off, as I said. The ones that clearly got wide nose, as I said, African people got thin nose as well and wide nose, but the ones that got the wide nose and thick lips systematically, they have knocked off. And you're right, even the sphinxes, as our ancestors referred to as Harum Akkits, okay, they equally have been knocked off as well. So we've got to understand that the hatred that the Europeans have, because when you start to deal with the ancient African civilization, you have to ask the question, where was Europe at, all right? They were in caves. When the pyramids and the structures that we see in ancient Egypt today, okay, they were in – and this is what white supremacy can't deal with. The fact that their civilization of today, if you want to call it that, okay, is a baby compared to the ancient African civilization
correct.
Of the Nile Valley. But,
correct.
Again, their white supremacy has worked because they taught the world for us to deify it, all right? Imhotep, who built that world's first stone building, all right? Where was Kepler? Where was Copernicus? Where was Galileo? Where were these Europeans at that are still taught, our children are taught to deify in schools today, all right? There was no Western world yet when Imhotep, this black man who built the world's first stone building, who was a physician 2,000 years before Hippocrates, who gave us a circumference of the earth of 25,000 miles circumference of the earth long before some Aristosthenes the Athenian. They robbed and plundered the temples that you spoke of a second ago, right there at Karnak and Luxor, as well as many other temples, and robbed the scrolls and housed them in and built the Alexandria Library. This is what made the awakening of the Western world through that knowledge on those papyruses where the name paper came from. So this is the knowledge that we've got to understand. Those temples, like the Temple of Karnak, over 4,000 years ago, this is where we see the earliest universities. Can we teach our children about the world's first universities? When we say the first universities, we think of Europe. We don't think of Africa. And this is the fear, the awakening of the African mind. This has been the fear, and this is what we plan to reveal. And I'm most honored to be on the program with our brother, Mustafa Hefni, and we can see
Thank
the political struggle and what they have taken him through. Okay, here's a black man, and they're going to try to make him white.
By the way, when I recovered from my psychiatric disability and rejoined and returned to the workforce, I was fired 5 times. Just like Initial S of Wayne County, Nisa, told me, no one would hire you and you would be running from one job to the other for the rest of your life. I was fired 5 times in 1 year.
And as Dr. Ben, my teacher, told us, that he was fired 48 times, okay, from trying to tell the truth. So, again, this is what happens when you try to tell the truth, and that's why
exactly. You
have a lot of African professors, in many cases, who won't even though they know the truth, but won't even utter nothing about
Correct. This
knowledge.
Mm. Correct.
We just like when you look at the astrophysicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Here he's talking about all these Europeans on the documentaries, okay? And he's talking about the Alexandria Library. But not one time did he mention ancient Africa and Nubia to predate it what he's talking about thousands of years.
Correct.
He would not get that show if he did not reveal that truth. If he revealed the truth of Africa, he would not have that show.
Let me tell you what I said to President Obama and to the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights in my letters. I said, research shows that humanity originated in Africa. Research shows that the black race is the oldest race and that the white race is the youngest.
That's right.
Research shows that all races have evolved from the black race through mutation, gene flow, genetic drift, and recombination. Research shows that civilization originated in Africa. Research shows that the knowledge of the black people of Nubia and ancient Egypt has influenced and has provided the foundation for all subsequent human knowledge. As a black man and as an African, I'm proud of his black heritage.
Okay, let me cut in,
fellas. I didn't like that.
Obama, let's keep in mind, Obama, went inside of the Great Pyramid of Akekufu. This is a documentary. I'll show it in my lecture. He went inside of the Great Pyramid. Zadi Hawass was with him. And he looks down at a piece, and he points to it. And he said, that looks just like me. And when you look at that piece, and I will do a comparison, it looked just like him. They only showed it one day on CNN, and they didn't show it again. That revealed to Obama, when he pointed at a piece inside the Great Pyramid, carved on the stone, of this African man, this right here, this black man on a stone, and he pointed to it. And next thing we know, Zadi Hawass is hurrying Obama outside of the Great Pyramid.
I saw that. Brother Hefni, I want to bring on my partner, Brother Cujo, who is giving me words to say. Brother Cujo.
Greetings, family.
Hotel, Brother Cujo.
Hotel.
How are you, Cujo?
I'm doing well, Dr. Hefni. Good to hear from you. I'll be real brief. I'm on the phone with some masters here, so as a student, I'll just be brief and say, a lot of my focus is understanding that, this information, when downloaded into the next generation, with the right intensity, we can change this stuff, in a generation or two, So a lot of what I see as a younger mind, I guess you can say, is the rise of free access to information, YouTube. For example, Erykah Badu has just recently released a short Western movie through the Tadao service, so she didn't have to go through these big mega media companies. And so now we're actually at the point where we can have people who can actually make things from the grassroots or mudroots, or however you want to call it, and present new information. There's a a digital animation film out or set of films called The Black Archaeologist, and it's all through YouTube, all through Facebook. You can see a lot of the sponsors, sponsored advertisement where you can go and buy. Someone created this Black Archaeologist who time travels and goes to different historical sites and times and just kind of relives it. And so this is another guy, again, who he didn't go through Fox, he didn't go through Viacom, he just made something. And we're at that point in time where we can actually manifest and we can be innovative. It's a time like no ever. And so I'm just gracious to be blessed with the information. I'm glad to have parents who allowed me to understand this at an early age. And, you know, I also give myself thanks for continuing to pursue through all this. And that's all I really wanted to say is that the youth is really our future. And that's what we're really fighting for through all this as well.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah, you're absolutely right there, Brother Kojo. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would say in terms of being now moving into an elder stage myself is I've seen the vicissitudes, though, okay, the ups and downs of our consciousness. And even back during the time when it, you know, when we have the 70s and 80s and the conscious, and I was one of them. A lot of it, we were saying, bringing this knowledge to black bookstores were flourishing. People were buying black books. The information was out there. And I said, this is a new awakening. And Dr. Ben let me know. He said, brother, wait a minute. Okay, you've got to realize that this fight has been going on since we got off the plantation. I mean, since we got off those slave ships. And every time they see us moving forward, then the battleground starts over and over again. So don't think that this is new, that this is a new thing that we're moving forward. That if you don't have a vanguard to protect, okay, what we're building, then, of course, they will come in and destroy it. So in my era, as a youth coming up in the 70s, 80s, and lecturing with the master teachers and scholars, and then when this move and it was awakening the young people, they started to attack it in 1990. Wiped out the lectures on the college campuses and everything. Brought in gangster rap to destroy the lyrics when they saw this. So don't look at this as new, my brother. Don't look at this as a new awakening. I agree what you're saying, but it's within the space and time that you understand it. But the battleground is always going to be there. And when we move forward, that's when they line up again. And then, so I hear this a lot now, but I'm looking at myself as a youth. I'm looking at the time when I spoke of David Walker, okay, when he was saying it back way back during his period, when Martin Delaney was struggling back during his period and it was attacked. At one time, we identified as Africans. We didn't identify ourselves as Negroes and coloreds and definitely didn't use the word nigger, all right? But they attacked our identity back then because they saw with us associating with our identity, who we are as an Africans, that they could not create the mental and psychological enslavement nor neo slavery. So they attacked it. Institutions, okay, like Prince Hall didn't call the lodge Prince Hall. He called it the African Lodge. But it was a battle of that identity even back then. So we have gone through these vicissitudes. We have this awakening, and then the attack happens, and we go back into the woodworks. So back during the 1990s, when many of the faculties and the black faculties were awakening and bringing in many of the scholars and myself and many others, all right, whites saw this. Then it was attacked, and because they work in the system, and just like our brother Mustafa Hefni said, what advantage they have is that paycheck. Then they said, if you teach this, then you will be fired. You will not get tenure. So you've got to understand this is not new. Even though we got the technology, even though we got these computers, but keep in mind, what did they do to the black bookstores? They destroyed them. Okay. They destroyed them. So even in the technology of these computers, they will eagerly find a way to shut down the knowledge. And in my opinion, they're shutting it down through the music and the lyrics. Okay, yes. By keeping us in the most decadent stage of our, you know, of us, of who we are, by calling ourselves all kind of names and sisters' names and gangster rap and everything else, then that awakening can't take place because the degradation is so deep, okay, in creating the self-hatred now. They don't have to do it now. We do it to ourselves now, and that degradation is so deep that we can't have that awakening to that African spiritual consciousness.
Now, let me ask a quick question. Like back when a lot of this, you know, in the 70s when everything was very moving fast-paced and in a more positive direction.
We were fighting in the streets.
Was there an outlash against the education system? Like nowadays I see a lot of our
The outlash in the educational system. excuse me, Brother Coach Joe, it was in phases. It was in phases, okay, because that was the Black Power movement. I would say the attack on the educational system came in the 80s, okay, especially when there were those who were...
Did we create some sort of a movement to try to get the education system more in tune? Because I'm seeing now there's a lot of people doing homeschooling.
Yes.
I see a lot of homeschooling happening nowadays.
Well, I think a lot of homeschooling is coming is because when many... Back during the late 70s and early 80s, okay, especially in the 80s, there were those who felt that we should try to get this information, okay, into the school system. But who controls the school system? Whites.
They do.
Okay, so they control the syllabus. They know that as long as we keep the history within the circumference of their time, everything is okay, all right? But when you start talking about Imhotep, there's no Socrates, there's no Plato, there's no Thales, none of these, there's no Pythagoras. They don't exist when you start talking about Ptahotep and Kajimi and Akhmahor, people that we should all know, all right? They feared that. So this is where they started to attack the African-centered movement, and how did they do it? They said we were crazy, that we were creating some crazy Afrocentricity, and that these people are out of their mind. They're trying to make Socrates black. They can have Socrates. We're not trying to make Socrates black. We're talking about Imhotep. We're talking about Ptahotep. We're talking about Ursa Ma'atra, Septep, and Robert Mesomori Amun. We're talking about grandmaster teachers and kings thousands of years before some Europeans. But we didn't have the control over the institutions. So now it's coming to where brothers and sisters realize that, and they realize that the only thing they have is to homeschool and hopefully out of that homeschooling, we can start to build our own schools. My children went to Marcus Garvey School in Los Angeles, an independent school started by Dr. Onion Palmer, all right? This is how it's going to work. If we can build churches on every corner, we should be able to build schools controlled and operated by us, because the white supremacy system is not going to alter their syllabus to teach an African history thousands of years before the Europeans were out the caves. They're not going to do it, because that puts cracks in the white supremacy system, and by doing that, we will not deify it. And the fact that we will not deify it, the Europeans realize they will not have the psychological nor spiritual control over black people. And the reason why they have control over us, because most of our people think that we were nothing but savages and heathens. And that's the reason why this white supremacy system on a global scale has been able to do what it has done thus far.
Brother Quayle, and let's say this, brother, it's a flip side to the internet too, because we have a lot of our people who are just out here for their own self-benefit, and they're teaching a lot of screwed up stuff, mixed together stuff they got from Kwesi, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, or John Jackson, and on and on and on, our scholars, and they're mixing it up with these pseudo-black religions and all these different things. You have to be very, very careful. And I would tell you to stick to the older scholars and those who carry on their work, like Aswa Kwesi, and we hopefully will have some young people that's trying to carry on his work and the work of those who came before him. We got to keep this thing like going in a straight line.
Well, that's the
only
thing. You're absolutely right, Brother Ogbo. That's the thing. The internet is done. I mean, when I did apprenticeship under Dr. Ben, okay, working under him, not trying to create fame in my name, all right, 14 years with him. And that's one of the things I see with the internet is the fact that, you're on there, you're into the personality, just trying to develop fame in a name, not trying to develop apprenticeship. Okay, a mentor, where I can, you could mentor somebody. So that's the drawback is because of the what I call the Hollywood environment of the YouTube and the internet situation. It's more fame in the name in many cases. All right, not in all cases, but in many cases, that's what we see out here a lot. So it's an instant gratification type of society that we live in. Everything's instant, fast food, fast this. So people don't want to take the time to do the tedious research in many cases that it takes, and especially going under the apprenticeship that it takes. I spent 14 years with Dr. Ben. It was not a one time with him. It's not like I know him from the distance. It's not like I, just ran up to him and started taking pictures and saying, here, I'm with Dr. No, I worked with him over there in the field with him okay, in Egypt, down in Nubia, down in the Sudan, way back in 1982 and 83. So this is the kind of tedious work and apprenticeship that must take place, okay, for that to take place. But when you're looking at instant gratification and fame in your name, then that's what it turns out to be. All right.
Crazy. My ideal is people want to do all this GoFundMe to build these schools that basically can't teach, but what they want you to teach.
I don't understand how people can talk about, you know, there's schools out there that, like I said, my children went to Marcus Garvey School. Okay, Dr. Onion Palmer, who started with, first of all, an elementary school, then a middle school, then he built two high schools, all right? So he was in the work of building schools. He had a school. He put out his own money first and started with the school to show the people that he could do this, and people saw that, and that's what they built on. My children went there. All right, there are other independent schools that are out there. You know, if there are people out there talking about building schools, and they're not even in the business of school, all right, and then started at the university level and all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So there's, you know, I mean, so that's what I'm talking about. The internet can put a whole lot of stuff out there. People become gullible without critically analyzing the situation. You know, it's just like, I don't know if you watched the thing, The American Greed, okay, is one of the shows that they got on TV, and it shows how these people are just being ripped off. Okay, because somebody got a good rap, all right, and they not having critical thinking about situations and seeing that, you know, somebody laying a foundation with something. So I'm saying that there are schools out there that need money, all right. There are independent schools. They're there, all right.
Absolutely.
They're not, and that's what we should try to invest our money in. Dr. Onion Pump? Yes, sir.
Dr. Kwesi, after I recovered from my psychiatric disability, the first job I got was a teacher at the Nosoroma Institute Public School Academy. It was a charter school, African-centered curriculum. It used to be an independent school. The principal said, when I had my interview, the principal, Malik Yakini, said, I know about your struggle. We support you 100%. I told him that I might get fired. You'll be forced to fire me because I'm saying that I'm black while I'm legally white. He said, no, this is an African territory. No one can tell us what to do. This is African territory. It used to be an independent school.
And that's the kind of school
African
we need.
Territory. Through African, it used to be. But when it became chartered school, they became easily influenced and easily pressured by the system.
Because of the money
exactly.
that the whites were funding it from the government.
Exactly.
And this is where the problem comes in at.
Do you know what happened?
You tell them what to say and what not to say.
Exactly. Every day in the lineup of students and teachers in the auditorium, we shouted Black Power and Midfest in a charter school. I believed him because this is what they did. But when the pressure came down, he fired me.
They didn't do the pledge to the flag. They said Black Power every morning, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. But he fired
right
me.
On. Right.
He fired me due to pressure.
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, until we're able to control, own, and operate and build our own institutions, and, you know, and
exactly.
schools are out, then that's where it's got to start at, you know. But we've got to start, start with the youth, you know, start with the young people, you know. And there are many schools out there that are independent schools that are struggling economically, all right. Like I said, the model I have is Marcus Garvey School in Los Angeles because my children went there, all right. And so many brothers and sisters, in fact, they competed, Bel Air and Beverly Hills, they couldn't figure out how the students, the black students at Marcus Garvey School were beyond them, all right? And then Newsweek came out and said, the problem with black schools, they'll teach black stuff. Well, first of all, they're making straight A's with this black stuff, all right? And the white schools, they're getting white stuff. So here's a mother who brought her child to Marcus Garvey School who was failing in the public school, and he was getting F's, and then she brought him Marcus Garvey School. He's making straight A's because now he's learning about himself. Now,
and he did.
After he started, but this is the sad story. After he started doing well, she felt that Marcus Garvey School cured him, and then because her preacher told her that she wasn't paying enough tithes, that she needed to pay more tithes, she took him out to school. He found out that the little brother is actually a genius, all right? But he opened up his own ancestral genetic memory bank. She took him out to school, and putting back into the public school, and then he starts failing again.
Yeah.
So that's the fear. I mean, what whites realize that how is it white children do very well in school? Because here you got an educational system that teaches nothing but what whites did. Whites did this. Whites beat up on these people. Right. They started civilization. So of course their ego is going to be very big. Their self esteem is going to be very high. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I myself when I go to universities and I'm teaching on African history, and the students, I mean, just in a matter of an hour and a half, their spirits are riding high, all right, eager, want to know. And then the white students, because of the white supremacy educational system they got, now all of a sudden they feel like they're intimidated by this knowledge because they realize now through an hour and a half that your people didn't do all this, that when our ancestors were building this, Europeans were in caves. So if that can happen in an hour and a half to raise the spirit up where the students were wanting to know and fired up, what would happen if they got that from grade school all the way to PhD?
Right.
Correct.
And that's the fear.
We'll be building the pyramids again. Now, before the show cuts off, let me get this address again. Aswan Kwesi is coming to Detroit. Him and his wife, Mary Rockwazy, will be given a lecture on Africa and
ancient destruction of African. Hers will be on the cultural destruction of African fashion.
Yes, mm-hmm. and tell them what yours is going to be.
Mine will be Unlocking the African Genius from the Books in Stones.
And that's on Saturday, May the 21st, 2016. The doors open up at 1:30. And it ends at 5:30, and it's at Royal Oak Township Recreation Center, 21272 Mendota Avenue, Ferndale, Michigan. And I want to iterate that this is a historical black town that was started by black people way back in the 1800s, because blacks couldn't live in Detroit at that time because of the racism. Mm-hmm. And this was a black in the group that came from there that a lot of us old heads might know about. It's called the Spinners, are from that town. It's a historical black town. It's going to be a historical event. Be there.
And our brother Mustafa Hefni is going to be there as well. So this is going to be a great, great, great experience, okay, that we're
going
to have.
The title of my presentation will be, I am not white, I am a black man, and I'm proud of it.
Whoa, right on. That's it.
And you'd be able to shake his hand and sign his petition to help him out and help the race out, helping brother.
It's online. The petition is online. The petition is online. Yes. I need as many signatures as possible.
Yes, yes. So Mustafa Hefni, what he's doing will help lift up our whole race. Believe this.
Thank you very much.
Need to
I'll put his petition onto the event page so people can sign it even before the event.
Yes.
It's on my Facebook page, Kojo.
Okay, I'll share it. Yes. I'll share it around for you.
Thank you.
Yes. We need to get behind Brother Mustafa Hefni, Aswan Kwesi. And what I was saying the first time is I think that we should fund some young people to go with Aswan Kwesi overseas to learn what he's doing, like he did with Dr. Ben. We need to fund some young brothers to go with him to keep this legacy going. That's what we need to do. That's my opinion.
Asante, my brother.
Yes. Now, I thank you both for coming on to Wake Up African People, and we're going to be signing off, and you can see Aswan Kwesi in person and Brother Mustafa Hefni and Mary Wakwesi at the Royal Oak Center. I've given you the address, and you also can call.
Is there a phone number for them to call as well, Brother Akbar?
Yeah, my phone number to call is 267-582-4211 if you need to ask any questions. If you want to vend, is vending opportunities also available? And we will be glad to see you all there at this historic event. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to being on the program with our brother Mustafa Hefni.
Thank you very much, Coach. Appreciate it.
Good tap to both of you guys. and may the ancestors protect us and keep us strong in our mission.
Okay. Asante Sada, it's an honor to be on the show, Wake Up Africans.
Hotel.
Thank you, guys. Nice meeting you all.
You're welcome, brother. Peace.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.